Well, good morning. For those of us who have not met before, my name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at CORE. And like Des said earlier, whether you're checking us out online or here in person, we could not be more excited that you are here with us as we arrive at the finish line with our third and final part of this series that we have been calling Anxious for Nothing. And throughout this entire series, we've been acknowledging this possibility within every single one of our lives to find a healthier path through the most difficult seasons and the most difficult moments of our lives. That as we encounter those difficult seasons and difficult moments, whether we like to admit it or not, it brings with it a whole lot of feelings and a whole lot of emotions that we'd rather not deal with. And whether we admit it or not, every single one of us in this room have experienced moments in our lives, be it in our present or in our past, in which we have grappled with the emotions of fear and worry and anxiety and even depression. And as much as those difficult circumstances have flooded into our lives and have wished for each of us for them to never be something that we would have to grapple with, the reality is simply this. Is that oftentimes we are faced with the truth that those emotions in our past, in our present, and yes, even in our future, aren't going away. And yet the reality is the way in which we have dealt with it in our past hasn't always been the healthiest way to bring about the best solution and the healthiest path into our future. You see, what we'd all be forced to admit is this. Is that when it comes to experiencing those difficult emotions in our life, like worry and fear and depression and even anxiety, ignoring it isn't working. Acting like we're okay isn't working. Believing the lies that the people around us, a parent or someone close to us, has fed us, that if you're experiencing those emotions in your life, there's something wrong with you and something broken inside of you that reserves you to the fact of you should sweep that under the rug and try your hardest to hide that from everybody you come into contact with. Not even that is working. But what if I told you that there was a healthy solution forward? Not to remove the difficult circumstances of our lives, but to help us begin to lift the weight off of our shoulders that we feel so readily as we pass through the difficult seasons of our lives. You see, that's what this series is all about. It's about this opportunity that every single one of us have in those difficult seasons of our lives to stop doing a few practical things that will help us traverse through the difficult seasons in a much healthier way. Like stop running ourselves into the ground and believing the lie that as we experience difficult seasons of our lives, the way in which we fix it is to run faster and harder and longer to try to outrun the problems of our lives. Or for us to adhere to the belief that maybe the solution is to shut others out. And if we want to keep this concealed and keep it to ourselves and no one to know about it, then we should shut everybody else out of our lives in those difficult seasons. Or maybe for some of us, the step that we stop taking that has become commonplace to so many of us as humanity as we traverse through difficult and negative circumstances is that so often when we get stuck in this place of hurt and pain and heartache, it becomes so easy for us to simply focus on the negative. That everything is wrong with our lives and everything is wrong with the world, and we find ourselves stuck in this place where all we see is negative, and all there is negative, then there must be no way out. But it isn't just a series that's predicated on us being willing to stop some of the common mistakes that we make in the seasons where we feel fear and worry and depression and anxiousness of our lives. It's also about this reality that we have an opportunity to take some healthy steps in the right direction. Healthy steps like surrounding ourselves with the right people and recognizing that if we live surrounded by the wrong people, listening to the wrong voices, and living for the wrong values, oftentimes what seems right will be wrong. And we have an opportunity when life gets most difficult to recognize that we need to be surrounded by the right people, and we have an opportunity also to begin to change our perspective. To change our perspective and to begin to see our lives and the world around us differently so that we can move forward through that anxiousness and fear in a much healthier way. You see, this series is a series that acknowledges that every single one of us have some external steps that we can take to begin to help us fight this internal battle that we all experience. Because here's the truth. is that for many of us, the greatest battles that we will fight in our lives are the battles that nobody else sees. Am I right? Is that oftentimes the greatest battles of our lives are the battles that happen in response to the external circumstances of our lives. Sure, the external circumstances are bad, and nobody's downplaying that. The hurt of the diagnosis, the uncertainty of a lost loved one or a lost job or the death of a dream or that financial hiccup. Each of those things are difficult, but oftentimes they pale in comparison to the internal struggle that immediately follows that external circumstance. That fear and that worry and that depression and that anxiety is so much more difficult for us to deal with and process through than the external circumstance that got us here. And if there's somebody who knew that reality to a T, it's this guy that we've been using as the launching point for every single week of this series, a guy by the name of Paul. And if you know nothing about Paul, Paul was a dude who lived about 2,000 years ago. And he lived at a time in the ancient Roman Empire in which it was not easy to be a Christ follower. In fact, what we know about Paul's story, what's documented about his life, is that some of the external circumstances that Paul went through on a fairly common occurrence was that he experienced things like being thrown out in the middle of the public square and beaten in front of everybody. He went through public whippings and being stoned in front of an entire city. Paul experienced being snake-bitten and shipwrecked and thrown in jail more times than what you could count. And in light of all of those external circumstances, what Paul came to realize, what still rings true in all lives thousands of years later, is still just as real and just as relevant today as it was 2,000 years ago in every single one of our stories. What Paul began to realize is that this internal battle that nobody else sees will be far more difficult for us to find a healthy way through than the external circumstances of our lives. And Paul encounters this moment in which he faces that reality head on. Paul finds himself smack dab in the middle of a prison cell in the capital city of the Roman Empire, the city of Rome. And Paul had always dreamt of coming to Rome, but not this way. Not stuck in this prison cell, chained to this stinky giant Roman prison guard, wondering whether my life will come to an end right here in this cell. And as Paul begins to grapple with the external circumstances of his life and all the difficulties that he has walked through, there is this internal struggle that begins to rise to the surface. And in that moment, and looking at his life, but what's so incredible, not just looking at his life, but looking at your life and at mine as well, and the difficulties and the struggles that we would deal with internally in our lives in response to the struggles we have, the loss of loved ones, the financial hiccups, the diagnosis of our lives, Paul put pen to paper, and he wrote this for you and for me. We find it in his letter to the church in Philippi, starting in chapter 4. Paul writes, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice." You see, right from the get-go, Paul acknowledges this reality, this possibility that every single one of us have that seems so far-fetched so often. That no matter what our circumstances are that we're presently walking through, that it's possible for us to find joy in our lives despite our circumstances. And we ask the question, if you're anything like me, well, Paul, how in the world is that possible? How is it possible for me to find joy even when my circumstances are crap? He continues, "Let your gentleness be evident to all." And then he uses this key line. Here is how you find joy in the midst of whatever your circumstances might be. You remember this, for the Lord is near. That we find joy in the hope of this fact that I have a God that even though I sit right here in the middle of this prison cell, in the midst of my terrible, unfair circumstances, in my brokenness, I have a God who hasn't left me, who sits right here in the muck and the mire with me, who hasn't turned his back on me, who isn't afraid of my messes. And then he uses the title line for our series. He says this, "Do not be anxious about anything. Be anxious for nothing. But in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God." And when we are capable of doing this and hanging on to this and walking through the positive steps in the right direction, what we experience is this. And this is so incredible, y'all. This is what we all strive for, whether we know it or not. It's what we all wish we could attain in our lives. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. That no matter how bad our circumstances get, that we have an opportunity to experience some sort of peace in our lives. And yet when we read this passage, for those of you who have been here through the first 3 weeks of this series, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but within this very passage, Paul not once acknowledges his external circumstances. He doesn't talk about the whippings, the beatings, the being thrown in jail, the being chained to a Roman prison guard, anywhere within this passage. Do you know what Paul acknowledges? He acknowledges the external struggle. You are lacking joy. You are lacking peace. You are filled with all of this anxiety in your life. It's like 2,000 years ago, Paul understood that every single one of us would fight internal battles that nobody else would see, and they would be the most difficult battles of our lives. In the Carver household, we have a common occurrence that happens every 5 to 7 years within our family. And that common occurrence rests upon this fact. I have no idea where we got this from, but somewhere along the way we heard that you should keep your cars no less than 10 years past the make date. And so we have lived according to that principle for the entirety of our lives. And about 5 to 7 years, every 5 to 7 years being a two-car household, we make the determination not based upon it being 10 years. That's the minimum. Our basis of needing a new car is based upon the fact of, like, the wheels are falling off and it's no longer safe for us to drive and it's actually costing us more money to continue fixing the car than what it is for us to just get a new-to-us car. And so as we go through this process of getting a new car, what essentially happens is this. We go through the shopping process, and some of y'all know, right? I'm just a smidge cheap. And because of that and the shopping process, it's like I look at the same exact car about 27 times before I decide that that's the one for us. And we make this determination on everything that we need or everything that we want in a car. And when we get to that place where we purchase a car, here's the natural progression of how cars work in our family. And my wife fights back on this every single time, but it's something that I absolutely love to do for our family, and I love to do for her. That when we get this new to us car, the new to us car goes to my wife, and the old car gets passed down to me, and then the car that the wheels is falling on off gets passed down to Mill Irons. And within our family story, as we progress through this and I get the old car passed down to me, what essentially happens is within that car, there is something that just seems to be commonplace within that car every time I get the car in my possession. And that is when I jump into the car on most days, there is this pretty orange light on the dashboard that always pops up. And some of y'all are laughing because you know what I'm talking about. Right now, I'm driving the 8-year-old vehicle that has about 135,000 miles on it, and that pretty orange light, like a Christmas tree on my dashboard, greets me every single morning when I put the key in the ignition and I turn that baby on. And that light that greets me is the check engine light. And the reality is those of you who know me well know that, yes, I've already acknowledged that I'm just a little bit cheap, and I say a little bit because it makes me feel better about myself, and I'm just a little bit busy as well. And because of those two things in my life, what becomes easy is for me to just ignore that orange light and act as if everything's okay. For me to just believe, like, once your car gets over 100,000 miles, that orange light is just natural and it's just supposed to be there, just reminding you that your car's old. It's not that anything is actually wrong. It's just reminding you you're driving an old car. But what I also recognize is this, is that in our car, when that little orange light pops up on the dashboard, the little orange light is not actually the problem, right? The little orange light is just a signal that the vehicle has a problem. It's just notifying me that something has gone wrong. And when that little orange light pops up, and then in conjunction with the orange light, you hear that thumping in the engine, or something that you're like, I'm not sure if I'm going to make it from point A to point B the next time, and so I better take this in to have it checked out. What we recognize in those moments, if we get honest enough and we look close enough, is this. Is when that vehicle breaks down and there is a major issue with that vehicle, the safest place for us to take the vehicle for it to be fixed correctly is to the manufacturer. Because the manufacturer created the vehicle. It knows the ins and outs. It knows the nuances. It knows the sounds of the vehicle when the vehicle isn't quite right. And it knows to a T what to do to fix the vehicle correctly. But when that little orange light pops up on the dashboard of my vehicle and I choose to ignore it, or heaven forbid, I choose to think that I can fix it myself, or I take it to some janky third-party mechanic that knows nothing, or a different dealership that knows nothing about my vehicle, what ends up happening is that over time, the problem actually gets worse. And you see, the reality is the same is true in our lives. Is that those feelings, those emotions that we experience, like worry and fear and anxiety and even depression, are simply a warning to us that there is something happening in our lives within us that isn't quite right. And in order for those things to be repaired, there comes a point in which the best place for us to go is back to the manufacturer. You see, anxiety is simply a signal in our life that it's time for us to lean in to our creator, to our maker, to our manufacturer. And anxiety and things like depression and all life are simply this reality, this statement that is screaming out at you and at me that you can't fix this on your own. That you can't make this better by yourself. And y'all hear me out on this. It's okay to admit that. In fact, it's more than okay sometimes for us to admit that. It is healthy and mature oftentimes for us to admit that I just can't fix this on my own. And there is a holistic approach, don't get me wrong, to caring for ourselves much like we care for our car. That when we care for our car, we take this holistic approach at keeping our car as healthy for as long as possible. And that holistic approach looks something like this. That we find ourselves a good mechanic. It may not be the manufacturer, but when we need checkups or we need oil change or we need routine care, we want a good mechanic that we can go to that can do those things in a trustworthy way. And with ourselves, oftentimes as we experience those emotions, the holistic approach is that we find ourselves a counselor. And it is okay for us to do that. Come on, y'all. If the church has told you any differently, the church has led you astray. It is okay for us to find a trusted source in our lives to help us walk through the difficult seasons of life in the healthiest way. There is nothing wrong with you because you have seen a counselor. In fact, it may just mean you are more mature than the average folk. That you find somebody to help you maneuver and walk through and traverse the difficult path of life. But it doesn't end there. As we care for our car, what we also choose to do in a holistic approach is that we don't leave our car out in dangerous conditions. Am I right? That nobody with a garage, when they hear a forecast of hail, says, all right, let me take my car out of the garage and park it out in the hail so that it could get all dented up. We choose to protect our vehicles from hazardous surroundings. But oftentimes in our own life, we ignore that holistic approach. And we miss the fact that when we surround ourselves with hazardous people who aren't moving in the right direction, we are submitting ourselves to conditions that ding and dent us up in a way we weren't meant to be. And so we choose to surround ourselves with the right people and make the difficult decisions of saying no to some friends we may have had for a really long time that are going in the wrong direction, and finding ourselves a community group or a group of people or a person, somebody that we can surround ourselves with that help us move in a healthier direction. That we choose with our vehicles in a holistic approach, not to run our vehicles into the ground and to treat them as harshly as we can. That we don't burn rubber every time we pull out of a stoplight. That we don't run our vehicles as hard as we possibly can, revving the engine all the way up to 7,000 RPMs every time that we get in.
We don't slam on the brakes every time we come to a stop sign or a stoplight. We're going 35 in an instant. We slam on our brakes because we know that does damage to our vehicle that's going to cost us something that we don't want to pay in the end. And in the same light, with our lives, we choose not to run ourselves into the ground. That we take this holistic approach and we recognize that running harder, faster, longer, trying to outrun the pain or outwork the pain is something that is going to cost us something in the end that we don't want to pay. But at the end of the day, there always comes a moment in our lives, in our stories, within our difficult circumstances where there is only one appropriate fix. A return to the manufacturer. A return to the creator. The only one who knit me together, who knows me best, and yet within my life knows how to fix me best. And I believe with all of my heart that as we traverse through the difficult seasons of our life, and oftentimes we pull back and we drift in those difficult seasons from our Creator, from a God who loves us, oftentimes what we lose sight of is this. And maybe this morning for many of us, this is the one thing that we need to hear, that we need to attach ourselves to as we move through the difficult seasons of life. That if it's on your mind, it's already on God's heart. That we have a God who loves you, who loves me, who cares as we walk through brokenhearted situations and heartache and difficulties, who draws close to the brokenhearted and wants to be in the middle of our difficult circumstances. If it's on your mind, it's already on God's heart. There's no hiding something from Him. And yet here's the incredible part. That the one who knows us best is also the one who loves us most. That there is no amount of brokenness or mess or anxiety or depression or fear or worry that you could encounter in your life that would cause God to love you any less. Come on, y'all. That's the kind of God we have. And because of that, not only do we not need to hide or we can't hide anything from Him, but we don't need to feel the necessity to hide something from Him, because none of those things are going to cause Him to love me any less, to look at me as any less. You see, if it's big enough to worry about, I believe with all of my heart that there's a moment where it becomes big enough to pray about. If it's big enough to worry about, then it's big enough to pray about. We go to the Maker, to our Creator in conversation. And I get it, y'all. Here is the dilemma that many of us are facing. For some of us, we walked in here and we're new to this whole faith thing. And we're still uncertain about what all this entails and what the right steps are. Or maybe we walked into this room and we've been in this drifting phase for a really long time and it's felt like we've just been going through the motions. And this church thing, once every month or once every 6 months, feels like just a check the box thing. Or maybe you walked in here and you're still skeptical, to be quite honest, about this whole Jesus thing and this whole church thing, but you got invited by somebody and you're here. And the dilemma in your mind that just keeps popping to the surface is, here we go, we're going to talk about prayer, we're going to talk about conversation with God, and yet the reality has been, I have no idea what that looks like. I have no idea how to do it. I have no idea how to do it right. And Ben, all I've heard in my past when I've walked into churches before, or what's been presented before me, is that when it comes to all of these spiritual-like things, there are all of these rules attached to it, right? And when it comes to prayer, there must be all of these rules that I just don't know, that I have to get right in order for God to listen to me talking, in order for God to actually answer my prayers. And so, Ben, maybe that's the first step that you need to take, is just fill in the blank on all the rules that I need to adhere to before I decide whether it's worth it or not to be in conversation with my Creator. Because there must be an appropriate starting point, right? Like, how do I start this? Do I start it with God or Father or Daddy or Holiest of Holies? Or what do I say at the beginning? And then when I get to the middle part where I'm actually talking, does God only hear in, like, KJV language? So I got to throw in some these and some thous and maybe some henceforth for good measure so that He'll actually understand what I'm saying. And then when I get to the end, I've heard before, like, there's an appropriate ending. And so do I say in Jesus' name, or do I say over and out, or is it like 10-4, good buddy? Or what's the appropriate way for me to do all of this? Because if I don't get it right, here's what I know, Ben. I know that there's a strong likelihood, number one, that God is either going to get mad at me, or number two, he just flat out won't understand, or he won't be listening because I didn't get all the rules right, and so he's not going to answer any of my prayers. I'll be in like 7 years where God won't hear a thing I said because I didn't get all the rules right. And if you're grappling with all of those thoughts and all of those questions, I want to ease that tension this morning by giving you the one rule for prayer. You're going to want to get out your pen for this. The one rule for engaging in prayer and conversation with your Creator is simply this. There are no rules. We have a God who desires relationship with you so desperately that he has cut out the need for any rules. A God who values relationship so desperate with you that he's saying, just bring me whatever you've got and whatever way you want to bring it. Let's do this. I just want to talk with you. I just want you to be free to talk with me. I just want you to bring me whatever stuff you've got, whatever crap's going on in your life, in whatever way you see fit. If you're asking the question, how? In your own way, whatever that way is. Come on, let's just get real. Just talk. And I'm a God who's big enough and loves you enough to engage in conversation in this way. Whatever accent you want to talk with, whatever language you want to talk in, however many questions you want to bring to the table, if you want to come to me angry and have a conversation that way, guess what? I'm good with it. If you want to swear throughout it, come on, bring it on. I'm big enough for that. Hello, did we just say that? And we have a God who doesn't stipulate rules in the midst of relationship. He just wants to have conversation with you. He just wants you to bring yourself. And Paul makes that clear in that passage that we read. Right smack dab in the middle. What did Paul write? The NIV translates it as present your requests to God. And for some of us, it's like, well, that's a little bit confusing. What exactly does Paul mean there? Well, in the PBV version, the Pastor Ben version, let me simplify it. Paul simply means bring your stuff to God. Let God know what's going on. Let God into your stuff in your life. That's all Paul's saying. Just let him know in your own way. You see, for those of you who are parents to multiple children in the room, you know this about your kids. That as your kids grow up and they begin to have needs or wants in their life, each of your kids, if you have multiple kids, present their needs to you in different ways. For some of y'all, you have that one kid, right, that uses the butter me up tactic. You know what I'm talking about, right? They start by telling you how great you are, and you're like, here we go. I'm just the ATM. When's it coming? For some of you, you have that kid who is destined to be a lawyer. Because when they bring their needs or their wants or their requests to you, they've already got their 8 arguments planned out of why you should give in to the requests that they have. And the reality is, each of those different ways that your kids come to you and they talk to you and they present to you, that they show up at your door at 10:30 at night and just want to sit on your bed and talk or whatever it may be, it's what makes your kids unique. It's what makes them known and special to you. And in the same way, we have a God who is inviting us to just come as we are and to bring it as we would bring it, to communicate it from him. And the crazy part is that as human parents, there is this deep-held feeling inside of us that as parents, we all love to be needed, don't we? Whether we admit it or not, and hear me on this, as our kids get older, we admit it less and less and less. But there is something inside of us as parents that we love to be needed by our children. And while we as human parents, as our kids grow older, may hide that, here's the good news. We have a God who never hides his desire of wanting to be needed. A God who loves to be needed and loves to be in conversation with you and loves for you to bring whatever it is you have and just bring it to him. It's one of the reasons why one of the guys who rubbed elbows with God, when he put on flesh and walked on this earth, a guy by the name of Peter, when he put pen to paper in his first letter, chose to write this. In 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter says this, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up
in due time. What's Peter saying here? Peter is essentially saying in that first line, humble yourselves before God's mighty right hand. Peter is saying what Paul said, bring your stuff to God. Bring your requests to God and make it known to God that you aren't in total control. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. That there is a God who cares enough for you that whatever you think your greatest messes are is inviting you to bring that stuff to him, to cast those things and that weight upon him. But Peter doesn't stop there because Peter wants you to know both sides of the story. You see, Peter wants you to understand that not only is there a God who knows you most and still loves you best, but there is also someone who wants to continue to bury you beneath your anxiety and depression and fears and worries, wants to use it as his greatest tool of guilt to push you down and to make you feel as if you're sinking every day of your life. Peter continues, be alert and of sober mind. Understand this. This is essentially what Peter is saying. Understand this. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. That the enemy would like nothing else than for you to continue to believe that with all of those emotions, it's best if you act like nothing's wrong. If you bury it and hide it from everybody else. He wants you to feel as if you're drowning beneath the weight. And I think what makes this passage even more incredible is if we understand the context from which Peter is writing this very passage. You see, Peter writes this passage from a place of personal experience. He writes this passage based upon a moment in time where he specifically rubbed elbows with Jesus, and Jesus did this very thing for him. You see, there was this moment where Peter was with all of his buddies and they're out on this boat in the middle of the night trying to row across this giant lake. As they were out there stuck in the middle of the storm, they see somebody that looks like they're walking across the water. And as they get closer, they realize this is Jesus. This is our teacher. This is our rabbi. This is our savior. And as Peter is accustomed to doing so often, he opens his big mouth, probably in a way he should not have. And as they see Peter approach, or as they see Jesus approaching, Peter yells out, hey, Jesus, can I come out there with you? And Jesus is like, this dude is crazy. Sure, Peter, come on out. And Peter swings his legs out over the side of the boat. And in a moment, when Peter keeps his eyes fixed on his creator, he does something that no one in all of humanity has ever done before. He walks on water. But as quickly as the moment came, the moment left when Peter took his eyes off of his creator and started to focus on the worries and the fears and the anxieties of the waves and the wind around him. And as Peter took his eyes off of his creator and put his eyes on all of his external circumstances, what began to happen to Peter was Peter started to sink. And in that moment where he was sinking beneath the weight of the anxieties and the fears of his circumstances, there was only one thing capable of saving Peter. That one thing was taking his eyes off the fears and the anxiety around him and placing them back on his creator. And when he placed his eyes back on his creator, what did he experience? A mighty hand that was reaching out to lift him back up above the sinking weight of his circumstances and the circumstances of the world around him. See, maybe for so many of us, the issue of our lives isn't that we're sinking beneath the weight of our circumstances and our worries and our fear and our anxiety. Maybe the issue is that we've stopped reaching out for the hand that wants to lift us back up. To a God that's in our corner and wants what's best for us. We stopped reaching out and we find ourselves in this cycle of unwanted feelings and emotions that won't seem to spit us out.
That we've been on this terrible whitewater rafting trip and we've gotten stuck in the rapid and it just continues to circle us again and again and again. And it feels like there's no way that we've been in this for so long that we don't know how to get out now. And we find ourselves in this cycle of depression or this cycle of anxiety that looks something like this. You see, there's this moment, this external circumstance in which we feel anxious about it. Something's happened in our finances or in our marriage or in a diagnosis or in the loss of a lost loved one, and we feel anxious about that. And in the moment in which we feel anxious, our natural human response is we attempt to control. We attempt to control the situation and believe we can fix this, and we go to work on trying to fix it ourselves. And as we attempt to control things and we grasp for more control, ultimately what happens is this fear begins to overtake us of losing control. And what if I don't have control of my marriage or of my kids? And we become helicopter parents. What if I don't have complete control of my finances or every single one of my circumstances? And we fear losing that control, and it pushes us to a place where we fight harder to gain more and more and more control of our lives. And then something happens and we realize we don't have control. And we can't control everything. And we fight harder for that control, and we realize we don't have complete control, we feel more anxious. And when we feel more anxious, we attempt to control it again. And we grasp for more control, and we try to fix this ourselves, and we believe that we're the one who has the answers, and we're the one that can step in. And as soon as we grasp for more control, we fear losing that control. And in fear of losing that control, we fight harder to get more control in our lives, and ultimately we find ourselves in a place where we feel more anxious. And it's this never-ending cycle in our lives in which the anxiety and the fear and the worry never seem to go away, because we just keep believing that I'm in control, and I'm the only one who can fix this. And at some point, we must become people who are willing to break the cycle. And breaking the cycle is done with one easy step of acknowledgement. Beginning to break this anxiety cycle in our lives is done when we acknowledge this truth, that we don't always have the power to control, but we do always have the power to surrender. We don't always have the power to control. You can't always control your circumstances. You can't always fix everything that's gone wrong in life. But you can start to let go of the belief that you can. You can start to surrender all that weight you feel from believing you can control it or you can fix it. And there's really two ridiculously simple and practical steps that move us towards surrender in our lives. The first we already talked about. It's the act of prayer. That there is nothing in our lives that moves us to a place of releasing control like prayer can. Because it's this willingness on our part to finally acknowledge through our words, with no rules attached, God, I don't know how to fix this on my own. God, here's everything that's going wrong. God, here's everything that's broken. Here's everything that feels like a mess, and I'm bringing it to you, and I'm laying it down before you, and I'm letting go of some of my control and some of that responsibility, and I'm handing it back to you. That engaging in conversation with our God is this act of surrender that we partake in, an act that comes with no rules or no stipulations, just simply conversations. Let God know your needs. Surrender. It means bringing your battles and your struggles to Him and just simply asking for help. But surrendering control doesn't stop there. You see, there's this second step of surrender that we often pass right over because it's the most difficult step of the equation. It's the one that very few of us are good at or find comfortable in our pursuit of a healthier future. You see, surrendering control is also done on the back of listening. See, if you're anything like Ben Carver, I'm really good at talking to God. But there's something inside of me as a human being that has become uncomfortable with silence. It's become uncomfortable with the unknown, and I'm not getting answers as quickly as I wanted to get them. And it's been a day, God, and I let you have your chance. It's been a day for you to answer, for you to fix it, and you're not doing it, so I'm taking back over control. And yet sometimes we have to recognize
that in order to surrender our anxiety and our fear and our worries, it begins by surrendering our voice in order to hear his. And stepping back and saying, all right, Ben, you've convinced me there's no rules, there's just relationship to this prayer thing. And so I'm going to make this a part of my daily practice. And I'm just going to take my junk before God and I'm going to let him in on this and I'm going to ask for help. But it also means saying that there's a place for every single one of us to start and just sitting in the silence and listening for our God's voice. That maybe for you, the starting place looks like this. That every day I'm going to spend some time in prayer, but then I'm going to bust out my cell phone and I'm going to set the timer for 30 seconds. I'm going to set the timer for a minute because that's what I feel like I can do right now. And I'm just going to spend 30 seconds in silence. I'm just going to spend a minute in silence. Just trying to hear God's voice. And I may not hear it in those 30 seconds. I may not hear it in that minute. But this, it's this acknowledgement between me and God. God, I'm being silent. I'm surrendering my voice in this moment in an attempt to hear yours. And I'm not very good at this yet. I don't know how to do this yet. But at least I'm surrendering my voice in this moment in order to try to hear yours. And you see, when Jesus walked on this earth, he made it clear the importance of this in all lives and for the sake of our futures. Before Jesus went to the cross, he gathered his disciples together and he made this analogy to them of him being the shepherd and us being the sheep. And as he made this analogy, Jesus made this point clear. He said, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they will never perish." And this is so good, y'all. "And when my sheep listen for my voice, no one or nothing can snatch them out of my hand." That when they give me control, nothing stands in the way of my love. Nothing stands in the way of me becoming their protector, their provider, their healer, their comforter. But in order for us to get there, we have to be willing to stop and listen for his voice. See, there's this age-old human practice that signifies surrender. For thousands of years, people have used this signal as a sign of surrender to something or someone else in their life. That act is the act of raising your hands. In just a second, the band is going to play you a song. And as you listen to them sing the words and you see the words come up on the screen as you sit in your seats, I want to challenge you to something. And I get it, this challenge is going to be outside of the comfort zone for many, if not all of us. And it may not be a challenge for all of you. But I want to challenge you to step outside of your comfort zone in this way. That as you see words come up on the screen and they resonate with you and your story and your heart and where you find yourself in this constant grapple for control, that this moment is an opportunity for visible surrender between you and God. Is that you see those words for you to step outside of your comfort zone and to be courageous enough to say, "In this moment, God, I'm surrendering to you, and I'm raising a hand in the air, or I'm raising two in the air in this moment to say, God, I can't do this anymore on my own." Because you walked in here carrying something, and the weight of that something in your life feels like you're sinking beneath the waters. And yet we have a God with his mighty hand who is just waiting to reach out, just waiting to offer help. But we have a God who loves us like we love our kids. That when our kids become grown, oftentimes what happens is that as they grow up, we don't simply consistently offer them help. That our God loves us too much to force his help upon us. That we have a God who says, "I'm just waiting for you to ask me for help." And then I become a God who is willing and wanting to jump in. And you do so when you just say, "God, in this moment, I'm listening. I'm hanging on to every word that you might say because I don't want to miss a word you say.
I believe and I trust that you know more than I know, that you see further than I see. And God, I feel buried beneath it right now. And I'm tired of being caught in this cycle. And so in this moment, God, I'm surrendering to you. I'm tired of controlling it and thinking I can fix it on my own. And God, in this moment, with a raised hand or raised hands, I'm making this visible declaration. Jesus, I need you. Father, this morning, that is our heart's cry. That's our acknowledgement. We can't do this without you. And for myself personally, for so many of us, we spent a lot of our lives believing that the only way out was for me to fix it on my own, for me to get more control. And yet, God, I've tried it a million times and failed a million more. And God, in this moment, I'm tired of going at it myself. I need you. I'm bringing my stuff to you. But God, in this moment, I'm also acknowledging that I'm surrendering by listening. I want to hear your voice. Will you help me? It's in your name that I pray. Amen.